Welcome to Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. OJ Simpson. Everyone's talking about this. OJ Simpson, of course, former Buffalo Bills running back and infamously, I would say, controversy embroiled after being acquitted of killing his ex-wife and her friend, has passed away after a years-long bout with prostate cancer. A family member actually posted a message from his ex page saying that he had succumbed to his battle with cancer late Wednesday. One would assume he is now somewhere extremely hot, probably very warm, hard to breathe where he is. Now, I just want to kind of go through, this was, like it or not, believe the verdict or not, this was a huge case back in the day, for those of you who were alive to remember it. I'm not even sure if people, you know, Gen Zers, really understand the significance of the O.J. Simpson case. So in 1994, Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman were just horrifically murdered. I believe this was outside her house, and O.J. was the prime suspect. He, by the way, in at that time, decided, instead of turning himself in for days, he took a police on a chase in this infamous white Bronco scene. Those of you who lived through these days, you remember watching this chase. It was on every single TV network at the time, coverage of this white Bronco leading the police through this chase all throughout LA. And in 1989, years prior to Nicole Simpson's death, police responding to an anonymous phone call reportedly found Nicole bruised and battered with like a handprint visible on her neck. And at that point, she told police, "He's going to kill me." Nothing to see here, though. Okay. I want to play for you recording of a 911 call that she made after their divorce in 1993, where she is pleading for help and saying, "He is going to beat the shit out of me." Watch.
911 emergency.
Can you get someone over here now to 325 Gretna Green? He's back. Please.
Well, okay, what does he look like?
He's O.J. Simpson. I think you know his record. Could you just send somebody over here?
Okay, what is he doing there?
He just drove up again.
He just drove
somebody over?
Okay, wait a minute. What kind of car is he in?
He's in a white Bronco, but first of all, he broke the back door down to get in.
Okay, wait a minute. What's your name?
Nicole Simpson.
Okay, is he the sportscaster or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. We're sending the police. What is he doing? Is he threatening you?
I'm going nuts.
Okay. Has he threatened you in any way, or is he just harassing you?
You're going to hear him in a minute. He's about to come in again.
Okay. Just stay on the line.
I don't want to stay on the line. I'm going to beat the shit out of
you. Wait a minute. Wait. Just stay on the line so we can know what's going on until the police get there, okay? Okay, Nicole?
Uh-huh.
Just a moment. Does he have any weapons?
I don't know.
Okay.
He went home. Now he's back. My kids are upstairs sleeping, and I don't want anything to happen.
Okay. Has he hit you today or no?
No.
Okay. You don't need any paramedics or anything?
Uh-uh.
Okay. You just want him to leave?
My door. He broke the whole back door in.
And then he left and he came back?
And he came and he practically knocked my upstairs door down, but he pounded it, and then he screamed and hollered, and I tried to get him out of the bedroom because the kids were sleeping in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then he wanted somebody's phone number, and I gave him my phone book and was going to, or I gave, put my phone book down to write, just write down the phone number that he wanted, and then he took my phone book with all my stuff in it.
The dispatch. The dispatch.
What?
What does he say?
What the hell?
Now, I don't know. Doesn't seem like a very stable person to me. Of course, he was later acquitted. And after he was acquitted, he wrote a, what he called a fictional memoir that was called If I Did It, which doesn't really seem at all like something a normal, sane, innocent person would do after just being acquitted of a crime that you definitely did not commit. It doesn't seem like you would then go on to write a book called I Did It, If I Did It, Confessions of the Killer. Strange. So I want to read a tweet that I found. Again, I'm not calling it an ex post. It's still a tweet to me. I found this very interesting from USC alum Nicole Manet, who said, I've been waiting 29 years to tell this story about OJ and his days at USC. Now that he's dead, may he burn in hell, I have a story that I signed an NDA for that is no longer valid. I was a junior at USC working in Topping Student Center on campus in 1995. I was an administrative assistant to the president of student affairs that semester in the work study program. In early 1995, Robert Shapiro and Robert Kardashian, who was a USC alumni, walked up to my desk and said they had an appointment with my boss. Of course, these are OJ's lawyers, right? She says, I was studying to be a criminal defense lawyer with a dual major in poli-sci and international relations, so I knew who they were. The meeting lasted about 30 minutes. After they left, I looked at my boss like, what the heck was that all about? He walked me outside and we sat by the old sprawling big tree outside Topping, and my boss lit a cigarette for the first time in years and told me I had to sign an NDA because I could confirm OJ's lawyers were there for a meeting. Then he told me what the meeting was about. Before OJ could graduate from USC, the university paid off two families of two blonde white girls that he had dated and battered. They had both gone to the LAPD to report it. One claimed he also sexually assaulted her in their relationship. The school, USC, had a vested interest in OJ going far in football and protected him at all costs. OJ had been in custody for 6 months at the time that this had happened, and lawyers were in the discovery process for the trial, and OJ's friend Robert Kardashian, who knew OJ from also being a student at USC, thought it would be best if these stories never saw the light of day. So a large check was written, given to my boss, and they left. I'll never forget holding that check. Now, did you hear about this before now? No, that's how much power money enables. And she goes on to talk about how, after she was acquitted, she changed her major. So just totally bought and paid for. And by the way, imagine if he did, in fact, have this track record and there were, in fact, women before Nicole Simpson who had been injured at his hands. Nicole Simpson could still be alive today if people had actually held O.J. Simpson accountable. And so I'm reading this and I'm like, well, hold on a second. I was told that this was all about race, right? O.J. Simpson was being persecuted because he was black, right? I mean, this happened right after the Rodney King riots, where these cops in L.A. were almost fully acquitted on charges of beating, of course, black man Rodney King to near death. And there was civil unrest all across the city. I mean, like, I think 12,000 people were arrested. Several thousand people were injured. 60-something people were killed during these riots. And this is at a time where racial tensions are high and black people are being treated unjustly. But what it sounds like here is that OJ actually got preferential treatment, it seems, all throughout his life before he even allegedly murdered his ex-wife and her friend. Sounds to me like he had it made. He could, no pun intended, get away with murder and have no consequences. And so I just want to play, just as like a flashback in time here, the moment that O.J. Simpson was found not guilty, taken from the set of Oprah. And you'll notice audience members watching in real time. I want to see if anything clicks with you when you watch this.
In case number BA097211, we, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count one of the information. Superior Court of the State of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the State of California versus Orenthal James Simpson. We, the jury, in the...
That is just such a bizarre reaction to me from a... people were killed, right? Even if you didn't believe that, even if you believed O.J. Simpson didn't do it, he was set up, the glove clearly didn't fit. It's not like he was just pretending to struggle to get it on. Even if you believed that... how would that be an appropriate reaction? Like, I keep going back to, okay, what murder trial have I watched and seen someone that I truly believed be acquitted and had that reaction? I couldn't. Kyle Rittenhouse, my friend Kyle Rittenhouse, I definitely didn't jump up and down and hoot and holler and scream cheerfully when he was acquitted. In fact, the opposite. And, you know, it brings you back to that moment. It's just a painful reminder that that trial and subsequent verdict, in my opinion, was never about guilt or innocence. It seemed to be all about payback, right? Revenge for Rodney King, revenge on the white man, reparations, if you will, for wrongs perpetrated against other black men. But listen, hey, what do I know? I'm just a white passing Hispanic, okay? So don't take my word for it. Here is one of the actual jurors on that case, basically admitting as much.
You think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit OJ because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90% of us.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Uh-huh.
You think that's right?
We're living at a time where all we hear about is how black people have it so much rougher than white people. Black people are oppressed. You got to keep the race wars alive, right? But I don't know. I just keep trying to think of one white person who would have gotten off the hook for murder because of some injustice that happened to like a different white person. Wouldn't happen. Would never happen. And yet you still have black political commentators today in the year 2024 saying things like this.
And it's also just worth noting how much was impacted by this trial, Jake. So many things happened. We saw policing changing here in the city. And it's also worth noting, because of that unrest, that racial unrest in the 90s, that is why so many people who may not have been invested in O.J. Simpson were just happy to see that someone who was rich and famous and black could get away with what other people did in the system as well.
Whoa.
Stephanie Elam.
What? Hold on. People were just happy to see that men who were rich and famous and black could get away with what? Murder? Could get away with murder? Because that's what it's been reduced to, right? That's what the race conversation has now been reduced to is, well, if white people can get away with murder, we should be able to get away with murder too. Not like, hey, we should hold anyone accountable who is murdering other people. Doesn't matter what their skin color is. If they murdered someone, they should be held accountable. But no, that's not what we can talk about. We have to make sure that black people are allowed to freely murder others as well, I guess. Here's one more talking on CNN. She wants to tell you all about how this was all about race. And the mental gymnastics that are used here are just of epic proportions. Watch.
But it was so racially charged because of what had happened just before with Rodney King, but also just how black Americans feel about policing. It's right. Not like O.J. Simpson was the leader of the civil rights movement of his era. You right. know, he wasn't a social justice leader.
Right.
But he represented something for the black community in that moment, in that trial, particularly because there were two white people who had been killed, and the history around how black people have been persecuted during slavery.
There were
so many layers. And I guess I would just close with this, is that there was racial tension then. Uh-huh. There is racial tension now. It might not be the backdrop of the Trump campaign, but until this country is ready to actually have an honest conversation about the racial dynamics from our origin story till today, we will always have moments like O.J. Simpson that manifest, and our country will always be divided if we don't actually deal with the issue of race.
Gee, do you think that might be because you want to make everything about race, ma'am? Do you think that might be because you literally just took a trial that happened in the 1990s and tried to assign some sort of slavery? What did this trial have to do with slavery? We were so far beyond slavery in the 1990s, and yet somehow she's got to fit that in this narrative. Well, it all went back to slavery. What? What did it have to do with two white people being killed? They are just injecting all of this racial tension and racial conflict for everything. And then they want to tell you, well, race relations haven't been solved. Do you think maybe the calls are coming from inside the house? Maybe the problem is you. I don't know. Just a thought. And you heard she mentioned the Trump campaign. Because, again, you got to inject two things into every conversation. Race and also how it makes Donald Trump bad. This is so great. I have to share this before we go to break here. The LA Times wrote an obituary for O.J. Simpson, and they made quite the typo in this. It said, long before the city woke up on a fall morning in 2017, this is related to O.J. Simpson's prison sentence for robbery, Trump walked out of Lovelock Correctional Center outside Reno, a free man for the first time in 9 years. He didn't go far, moving into a 5,000 square foot home in Vegas with a Bentley in the driveway. They're literally so obsessed and broken by Donald Trump. They mistook Donald Trump for O.J. Simpson. They want him in jail that badly. They're like, oh, we're talking about someone spending how long? 9 years in prison. Oh, I'm fantasizing about it being Donald Trump. Oh, I can't wait for the day we put Donald Trump in prison. And then, of course, in an editor's note, the LA Times wrote, an earlier version of this obituary incorrectly contained a typographical error that used the wrong name when describing Simpson leaving Lovelock Correctional Center. The error has been corrected. Has it? It has on paper, but not in your mentally ill head. You still need some corrections there, LA Times. All right. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. First, we want to thank our sponsor this segment, Birch Gold. So, look, you guys are living in Joe Biden's America. I don't feel like I have to explain to you how unstable things are. There's a lot of instability out there, especially when it comes to the economy. The national debt is continuing to skyrocket. It's above $34 trillion. And look, eventually the house of cards is going to come crashing down. And I just want to tell you guys, if you haven't looked into gold as a, you know, type of diversifying your savings, do that. Okay. Let Birch Gold tell you about how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax sheltered IRA in gold, because it's not going to cost you a penny out of pocket. And historically, gold and silver actually have served as a hedge against inflation in times of instability, which I don't know, I would say is right about now. They've got an A+ rating with the BBB and tens of thousands of happy customers. I am one of them. My family has done business with Birch Gold, and I will do it again because Birch Gold has been tremendous, explaining everything to us and very, very easy to work with. You can text the word Sarah to 989898. They're going to send you a free information kit on gold. It's no obligation. Just learn more about it and decide if it's right for you. You can do that by texting the word Sarah to 989898. So I cover the movement that the left is undergoing of just trying to trans all of the kids and trying to push them into a lifestyle where if they don't irreversibly harm their bodies, they will at least, you know, maybe chop them off, chop off body parts, right? And I try to cover this as often as possible because nobody else seems to want to talk about all of the negatives associated with this. Because you know why? Because you'll get your YouTube obliterated. You'll get demonetized. You'll get a strike. And I just think that it's just so worth talking about, especially when you see cases that are just so egregious. Even you, as someone who deals in this demonic realm, even you are shocked by it. And so I want to welcome to the program Jeff Younger, who is a father here in the state of Texas of James and Jude, twin boys. And Jeff, it's just, I don't know how we haven't had you on sooner, because I have been talking about your case since it began. In what year was that?
2016.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
So this began in 2016. You were fighting your ex-wife for custody of your two twin boys.
That's right.
She was clearly trying to turn one of them into a girl, putting thoughts in his head that he was a girl. His mommy told him that he was a girl. And I know that you have been in a very long court battle with her. But now it gets even worse, because not only did she flee to California, she fled to California, and now the California court system is preparing to allow her to castrate James.
Yes.
At 11.
Yes.
Please tell me how this even is transpiring.
So it really all started when my son was two. Mm-hmm. She began to transition him to a girl. And if you go out to YouTube and search for "Mommy Says I'm a Girl," that video went viral.
Yeah.
You can see it. That's him just after his third birthday. Right. Now he never presented as a girl with me.
Right.
He always presented as a boy with me and a girl with his mother. And despite that fact, the psychologist that did the custody evaluation in our divorce still gave full custody to her. So then this culminated where she, you know, the Coppell school district was transitioning my son secretly behind my back. So I'd bring him to school in boys' clothes. They'd put him in a dress and make him use the girls' restroom. And 2019, we had a trial. I won it. I got 50-50 custody, and I got a check on all medical procedures. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then the judges in Dallas County, the liberal judges in Dallas County, moved me away from that judge to a judge named Mary Brown in Dallas County. And she systematically stripped me of all my parental rights using temporary orders, because in the state of Texas, temporary orders out of family court are not appealable. They are out of every other court, but not in family court. Mm. So I had no ability to go to the appellate court for relief on this, right? So stripped me of all my parental rights, and then eventually lifted the geographical restriction so that she could move him to California. I went up to the Texas Supreme Court and said, look, California just passed their transgender kidnapping law.
Right.
They will not send my son back when this law goes into effect.
Right.
Okay? And she had moved 1 month before that law took effect. And I said, in Texas, these procedures are illegal. In California, these procedures are required. So I said, on the best interest of the child standard, you cannot let my son be repatriated to California. And I asked them to have my son sent back to Texas, issue an order to have them sent back to Texas. The justices on the Texas Supreme Court said my son was no more likely to be castrated in California than in Texas. And Justice Blacklock wrote the opinion, and you just should go out and read it. It's just the stupidest opinion ever issued by the Texas Supreme Court. And they let her move. So, and then he actually contemplates, well, what if she did file in California? What would happen? And every single thing he mentions in that opinion, she's done.
People talk about Texas as being like, oh, we're so red. This is a bastion of freedom and liberty. Yes. And it's like, what world were these judges living in that they didn't think that this type of thing would happen in freaking California?
Well, so one of the things that I've learned running for office in Texas and dealing with politics here is the things that people in government say are not what they believe.
Right.
The fundamental issue with Republican politics in Texas is this. The donor class to the Republican Party are all Northeastern leftists. Yeah. The transgender movement that you and I fight against was not started by Democrats. It was started by the largest Republican donors, believe it or not. A guy named Paul Singer is the largest Republican donor. He's the founder of the Human Rights Campaign, the largest transgender lobby organization in the world.
Wow.
The child transgender movement was started by Stephen Pritzker. Well, he's now an ugly man in a dress. He's transitioned, but he was the third largest donor at the time. And he started the child transgender movement. This is a movement by the liberal donor class of the Republican Party. Now, so you have a problem for elected officials if you're Republican. If you're a Republican justice on the Supreme Court, you got a problem. You have a liberal donor that's going to bankroll you in a statewide waste, which is going to take, you know, $5 million.
Right.
And you've got a very conservative voting constituency. So how do you solve that problem? The way they do it is they do things that look conservative, mm-hmm. and add loopholes to it that please the donors.
Yeah.
So for example, the transgender law that it took me 6 years to get passed, it has a loophole in it. And that loophole is that they did not classify these procedures as child abuse, which means it's still legal to take your child out of state to do it. So the gender clinics in Colorado are advertising in Texas that they'll fly you first class, put you in a 5-star hotel and castrate your kid. And then you come back to Texas.
So I just, I'm trying not to I don't.
It's cynical, but that's how it works.
Well, and I talk to you and I'm like, I try not to get emotional because it's like, this is your life. I can't even imagine the hell that you're living every single day. And I don't want to pretend like I know. I just can't imagine, just as a mother of two sons, what that's like for you. But tell me about the hearing that is taking place on, what is it, April 25th, where you are not allowed to testify as the father. Is that correct?
Well, it's a non-evidence hearing. This is a procedural trick they've tried.
Okay.
So California rules are different than the civil rules here in Texas. So this is called a motion hearing. And so all evidence is documentary. They don't present witnesses. And it's designed to let lawyers argue over procedural stuff.
I see.
And make it and expedite it. It's actually been moved back now to May 30th. I'm not sure what's going on with that or why the judge did that. The judge did that sua sponte on her own.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why. But it's been moved back, and they've put in a letter. I mean, they just, this to whom it may concern letter from this gender person, her name is Dr. Khan. How appropriate. Dr. Khan met my son for 2 hours is what she said. And from that determined that he definitely wants to be chemically castrated. And in fact, he wants bottom surgery. He wants his penis cut off. Oh my God. And she puts this all in her letter. That he really wants this, and she says he's terrified of going through male puberty. Well, let me ask you a question. How does an 11-year-old boy start thinking about bottom surgery, cutting his penis off? How does an 11-year-old boy worry about, you know, his voice deepening, you know, when he's 15 years old? They're not thinking about these things. This is put there by adults.
An adult, right. An adult has put that, yes, that thought there. When is the last time you got to talk to your son?
About almost 3 years ago. The judge in Dallas County, Mary Brown, I call her Bloody Mary Brown. Bloody Mary Brown gave me supervised visitation because she said I was not cooperating with the counseling regime. But the counselors were not following the court order to do the counseling that was required for me to get 50-50 custody. They were trying to delay it. And I had spent upwards of $60,000 on it. And so I did it with another counselor in 1 month and did all the counseling, but the judge never allowed my counselor to testify so she could say she never heard the evidence. And then they gave me supervised counseling with a LGBT supervision service in Dallas County, and he wouldn't let me change my son out of a dress at the visits. And they did that on purpose because they know I can't affirm my son on religious grounds and just on basic, you know, I think good parenting grounds. I cannot affirm him in this. Yeah. They knew that. So since I didn't use those supervised visits, they said that I had abandoned my child and had not used my visitation. It's even mentioned in the Supreme Court ruling. Justice Blacklock, who I call black-hearted Blacklock, Justice black-hearted Blacklock said that he was very concerned that I had not used my visitation and didn't look at the reasons I didn't use that visitation in my filings with the court. So that's how they systematically strip me of my rights. That's how it works.
What would you tell the viewers out there who, I mean, like, what do you want them to know about all of this? What can they learn from what has happened and is currently happening to not just you, but also your son?
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people, when you would hear fathers and mothers come out of family court, people would just say, well, these are just troubled parents and they're just exaggerating what's going on. I just want to just give your audience this to think about. You have seen the corruption that the judiciary has committed against Donald Trump.
Yes.
And the January 6th defendants. Let me tell you, family court is worse than that. The prototype for all that corruption came out of family court. That's where they learned how to do this stuff, right? The family courts have been systematically created to have no oversight, and the appellate courts want nothing to do with them. So you have one judge that is going to do whatever they want. And most of the time in these liberal big city counties, these liberal judges are not going to do things with your kids that you want. And so the thing that you need to know, and that's one thing. Second thing you need to know that I didn't know going into this is that, and this is true in all 50 states I found out, you do not have a right as a parent to your child's medical or psychological records, which is shocking to me.
That's insane.
So it turns out that in Texas, a physician or a psychologist or a psychiatrist can exert a right of privacy for the child against the parent, and they do not have to tell you that they have exerted this right. So it's very, very important for parents to know you must never leave your children alone with a doctor, psychologist, or psychiatrist. People ask me, how was it legal for the Coppell School District to transition my son behind my back? The school counselor, using the right of privacy for the child against me, transitioned my son, and you under that law. So that's something we need to change in Texas. Parents need to be able to see all their children's records. Right. So that's the second thing. The third thing is, this is not a grassroots movement on the left. Okay, the left wasn't thinking about this fringe group of crossdressers and how we're going to attach human rights to them, right? This isn't about that. This is one of the most well-funded campaigns in the history of leftist activism. Mm. And if you doubt its power, it took them 15 years to get gay marriage. Remember that?
Right. Yeah.
15 years.
Yeah.
It only took them 4 years to get transgender. So that means they're actually more powerful now than they were in the 90s when we got gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, a Republican U.S. Supreme Court just applied Title VII to transgender. So employers have to hire transgender people and allow them to work in their offices and can demand pronoun usage and all this. And mark my words, there's no legitimate way they can use Title VII to do this and not use Title IX. So they're going to go, mm-hmm. the Supreme Court is going to rule that you know, men mm-hmm. can compete in women's sports. Yeah. And eventually it'll apply it to all the law.
Yeah.
And the only way that could happen at the level of the U.S. Supreme Court is if you have one of the most well-funded political campaigns in history. It's powerful.
It really is. Okay, tell everyone, Jeff, where they can go to support you.
Well, so there's a network of volunteers that are very concerned, deeply concerned about the transgender ideology and its mm-hmm. impact on children, especially. They're on a webpage on Facebook called Save James. There are some imposters, so look for the little boot logo. There's okay. a cowboy boot logo. I actually can't go to the page because based on my transgender advocacy, Facebook has blocked me.
Oh my God.
So I can't go there. But there's a lot of information there, and they keep up to date internationally on it. And it's a coalition of left and right on that page.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I get a lot of support, for example, from radical feminists who really support my son. The other place you can go is my Twitter, which is at Jeff Younger Show. I don't really have a show, but when my life became so public, I was a wry comment like the Truman Show.
Yeah.
and then I have a Substack, jeffyounger.substack.com, and that's where I write about the transgender movement. And you can get a lot more information about its history and how I think we can exert political power against this movement.
Yeah, which I would say there are few who are better equipped to know that than you, unfortunately, because of what you've gone through. So, Jeff, I appreciate you joining us, and please keep me updated on the progress of this.
I will.
I just...
You're just so sweet. You're one of the few people who is actually, you know, I feel like really cares about my sons.
Yeah.
And it really touches me that you pray for my sons. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. I do too, because I just... I don't know if it's because I'm a mom of boys or it just seems like it's just a human thing, right? It should be a human instinct to go, holy crap, how is this happening to our children? So I appreciate you,
thank
Jeff.
You.
All right, we've got to take a quick break. First, we want to thank our sponsor, Preborn. Speaking of loving all the babies, Preborn is an amazing ministry to partner with because what they do is very simple. They take women who are in crisis, who are thinking about abortion, who are probably being sold lies by the left, like it's just a clump of cells, don't worry about it. You're not going to have any regrets. It's totally fine. That's a lie. And they realize that's a lie when they come into the crisis pregnancy centers of Preborn and they show them the truth on ultrasound. Oh, it turns out that actually is my baby. I'm its mother, and I am entrusted by God to take care of this baby. They hear the heartbeat, and it's a life-changing moment. So what Preborn is asking is for you to partner with them in helping sponsor ultrasounds. It takes $28. That's the cost of an ultrasound. How many babies' lives can you save by ultrasound? Please donate securely over at preborn.com/Sarah. That is preborn.com/Sarah. I want to welcome to the program Blaze TV contributor Eric July. It's been a while, I feel like.
Yeah, it has. It has.
I've been gone, and you're a multimillionaire, so, you know, sometimes we just can't
connect. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but we'll take that.
I just like to say it, okay? So I wanted to have Eric on. Now, it's going to seem like I'm having you on because you're a black man.
Yeah.
Not so, okay? It just so happens that this whole Dexter Reed conversation has been taking place nationwide. This was a man who, 26-year-old black man, who was killed during a Chicago traffic stop. And I think that the mainstream media is trying to turn this into like the new George Floyd. Okay, the family is outraged. They can't believe that the cops would use excessive force to kill this poor, innocent black man who wasn't doing nothing wrong. Okay, and I just want to go through a couple different, like, just sort of the timeline, and then let's play the body cam footage and see what actually happened. Okay, so he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. That was why the stop actually occurred initially, okay? He initially complied with an officer's order to roll down his window, but then he started rolling it up again, did not comply with the officer talking to him, and then I believe, we'll watch the footage, started shooting at officers first, which I feel like is not a very good idea. I don't think you probably should start shooting at officers. So let's watch the body cam footage and see if this is another George Floyd. Do we need to have race riots in the streets? What really happened in Chicago?
Unlock the doors now. Open the door now. Open the door now. Open the door now. Officer Court David, shots fired, shots fired.
It's a lot of shots being fired at the cops.
Shots fired. Fernanda Neighbors,
10-1. Eric, is it not lost on you that the female officer ran away?
That was actually what I was going to bring up.
And the males apparently stayed.
That was going to be one of the angles.
Not lost on me.
St. Louis good.
All right, so that's enough. What say you?
Yeah, look, when stuff like this happens, the first thing that I usually go to is, okay, what initiated the conflict, okay?
Right.
Was this person in the act of committing another crime? Was there an act of aggression that happened that triggered this altercation?
Right.
And it turns out that this was just a traffic stop, right? About, a seatbelt, right? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the angle always is going to be when talking about these subjects, if we look at it with zero nuance, will be person got shot and killed over seatbelt. That's how essentially it's going to be worded, though that's not entirely accurate, and it's just a little bit more complicated. So, okay, we got that out the way. What happened and what's the conflict, whether you feel like it's justified or not, it is what it is. So, was compliant, then didn't. And not sure the why, of course. What possessed the person to start shooting?
Shoot.
And it doesn't matter if it's a cop or not. Not sure that is the proper reaction there, right, to any sort of inconvenience. If maybe that's what you feel that it was to start shooting at folks.
It's not going
to
end well.
Again, leave the cops out of it. Right? Doesn't matter what the conflict is.
Right.
We know that that is the ultimate utmost escalation.
Right.
Now it's going to, you know, be for real. And definitely if the other people have guns as well. All right. Now here we go. It's a shootout, right? Broad daylight. Yeah. But that angle, I don't want to deviate from that because of what happened, because what happened was a very unfortunate thing. But you talked and it wasn't lost upon you. It's not lost upon me that on the other side was the female cop. Should they be out there reacting like that? And I'm going to go with no. And I'm not, this is a red herring. This isn't me trying to like move the goalposts here or anything. I'm just saying, we all saw the same body cam footage. Mm-hmm. And when it hit the fan, mm-hmm, that chick's instinct was to get up out of there.
He's
right?
Gone. Yeah.
Like, get up out. It was flight. It wasn't fight.
Right.
It was flight. These are the people that we're supposed to serve and protect, right?
Yeah.
Got back. And you may look, trying to look for cover, got behind that tree or whatever that was. Yeah. I can't really see it from here. But the first instinct was not to stand true and, let's say, eliminate a threat or put down the threat. It was, I mean, she was hauling ass. I'm looking at them hands moving, was getting up out of there. So maybe that's another conversation that we perhaps have later.
It should be the conversation that we're having now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Right?
Like, we shouldn't be talking about whether or not this was racially motivated.
That is. I'm so glad you said that, because that's true. That shouldn't be the conversation at all. I don't think that has any. Even if you felt that it was an unfortunate situation, I hate that when, let's say, even if you think the cops are in error, I hate that the conversation immediately goes to race, because then at that point, it really, what it does is absolve them of everything.
Yes.
It's not, well, is it a issue with the actual cop, or is it an issue with laws? That's never it. Right. It's race.
Right.
For example, Eric Garner, I've talked about this many times, one of the more unjustified killings that we've had. Everything that everybody talks about with that is race.
Mm-hmm.
When it should be, this man got choked out for selling loose cigarettes.
Right.
That's what got him ultimately killed. Had nothing to do with race.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a problem there that a conflict will be initiated because they were selling loose cigarettes, right? Yeah. So that's what's so frustrating about subject matters like this. When we see that, is that race hustlers immediately go to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and instead of us having a substantive conversation about maybe look the cop's reaction. I don't know if that was rational, even if the other person in the car was irrational and trying to go shoot at people for getting pulled over for a traffic violation or what have you. We're not having those discussions, though.
Right.
It's, well, black man dead.
Right. Right.
Therefore, he must have been killed because of race.
Black man dead. It must have been excessive force. Now, I think that the police, I think the number of times that they all shot combined was like 96 times, which really honestly tells me they're a terrible aim.
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't take that many times, right?
That was crazy.
If you have, what, 2-3 of them and someone starts shooting at them, I don't know, I'm not a cop, but what I can tell you is if I'm armed and someone starts shooting at me, I'm shooting all the bullets back at them. every single one that I have, I'm shooting at them. Now, I'm hitting the target, but I'm shooting all of them because you came at me first, right? But the idea that we're supposed to just buy this, again, it's like, I know we got to go to break in a second, but it's like, oh, wow, another election year. And you're telling me that this black man was murdered by cops who happened to maybe not be the same skin tone as him. And now we're supposed to be up in arms again and have riots and loot stores for some reason, because somehow you need a new pair of Nike shoes because a guy got killed and all that. I don't know. It just feels very reminiscent of all of the George Floyd situation.
I don't know if really this quick, is going to work. I don't think it will. Definitely after seeing what happened, I don't think that's going to work. But the attempt is just disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because they saw our country was worse off for the last time they did it.
Absolutely.
And they still want to do it again. All right, stick with me. We've got more to come. First, we want to thank our sponsor, Relief Factor. So those of you who are living in pain, you think that's the way it is. It doesn't have to be this way. Okay, Relief Factor is an all-natural anti-inflammatory. And it's not like, it's not prescription, so it's not going to make you feel loopy. You're not going to feel weird. It just actually targets the root cause of your pain, which is, of course, the inflammation in your body. And if you can get rid of that inflammation, it can be life-changing. Try their 3-week quick start, okay? 70% of the people who buy that go on to keep ordering more. That's how many people it's working for, and they've got a guarantee. So you're not out anything except possibly your pain. Okay. Try the 3-week quick start. You can get it by going to relieffactor.com. That is relieffactor.com. So, Eric, I've talked a lot on the program today about how this made up race relations, you know, narrative that, you know, black people are so oppressed all the time and all the, like, I've talked about it a lot today. I want to play a clip for you. You may be convinced by Representative Jasmine Crockett here from the Texas area, okay? She may have you, because she says that black people should be exempt from paying taxes as a form of reparations. And I know how you feel about taxes. So I'm going to play this. And I'm going to see if maybe you can find, I can't even say this with a straight face, if you can find some common ground with Jasmine Crockett. Listen.
Just this past week, I saw, I don't remember which celebrity, but it was actually a celebrity. And I was like, I don't know that that's not necessarily a bad idea, but I'd have to think through it a lot. One of the things that they propose is black folk not have to pay taxes for a certain amount of time, because then again, that puts money back in your pocket. But at the same time, it may not be as objectionable to some people about actually giving out dollars. Yeah. But obviously, then you start dealing with the different tax brackets and things like that.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons
we don't want you to hurt your head.
That, you know, we argue the reparations make sense.
I do agree that not paying taxes puts money back in your pocket. Yes, that is typically the way these things work. And we don't want you, honey, to worry yourself about thinking about tax brackets. That's going to make your head hurt, okay? But taxation is theft.
Always has been.
So what side of this do you say this on, Eric?
I got two positions on this. First of all, yes. Oh, if I'm just looking at it in a vacuum and you're talking about reparations, which are gay and retarded, I'm sorry. it's a nonsensical thing. I don't know why it is that people advocate, why we stop at that moment of history to point to it and say, well, because of this wrongdoing, the state needs to issue out some sort of funding. However, that's not what a tax break is, because that would mean that they're just keeping their own, which I'm all on board, but not because of reparations. The reasoning is stupid. But yeah, you come to the conclusion, all right, how about this? We apply that to every single American.
Right.
How about we apply to every American, every race, doesn't matter, that they should not pay taxes. Your ass would be out of a job, number one, because there wouldn't be no money to give you. And I'm perfectly fine with that. But the whole reparations just position is so largely nonsensical. And you see that even her, she's trying to work through this because she knows. She knows that even that is that's not what the larger, more prominent proponents of reparations are advocating. What they want is the state to issue funds out to people depending on if they are descendants of slaves or not, which a lot of y'all would be surprised how many of you aren't really, by the way. Nonetheless, that is stupid, because all it does is creates more victim. I'm not trying to hear anything about these emotional arguments of that the historical legacy, of, if you will, of slavery, or the fact that, well, this racial group got them, Jews in the Holocaust and the Japanese with the internment camps, as if all that was justified. None of it's justified. All of it's stupid. Main reason being, it creates more victims because it steals from people. It steals from the current working class as well as the future generations, because a lot of that money they don't got. So you're selling off assets of unborn people to then subsidize somebody else. Government is not a producer. This is what people need to understand about reparations. Doesn't matter the subject. Government is not a producer. Nothing that it has, nothing that it issues out to people, doesn't matter what it is, is something that they like reached in their own pockets and gave to other folks because they produced something. No, they had to steal it first and foremost. That's where the money comes from. All of it's stolen. So all of it's unjustified. And there's probably people watching this. Well, wouldn't that like mean that other things should be illegal or unjustified as well? You're starting to get it. You're starting to get it. The answer is yes.
So as I'm saying, we may be finding some common ground with a friend of the program,
just
Jasmine Crockett.
Extend it to the logical conclusion. Yeah. That's all you need to do, Jasmine.
Exactly. All right. We'll be right back. All right. Make sure to check out Eric's latest over at ripaverse.com. Just making all the moves, Eric. We're really proud.
We're trying. We're on a $1.3 million campaign so far with Yaira, number one. So that's the fourth one in a row. And we're just trying to keep up that momentum. That's all.
Golly, I don't know how you do it. Being like two million places at once.
Yeah, I was on a million calls before we got here.
Well,
such is life.
Go there.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.